from the Wednesday night come together group in Turtle Creek, Pennsylvania. I'd like to introduce Billy R.
Hey everybody, my name's Billy. I'm an addict. I've been clean and recovering in Narcotics Anonymous exclusively since December 31st of 1985. And like you said, I got a home group. I got a sponsor that I've had continuously since that time. And before I go any further, I got to say that your area, and I guess that means you people are really beautiful. You always have the best functions, and you know, you're not real big, but you're not real small either. And every time I come here, man, I always feel better when I leave than, you know, when I'm on the way. For some reason, you guys, somebody here always gives me a gift or two, stuff like that. Like, if I was remarking to this one fellow about his T-shirt was really beautiful. You know, my nickname has been for years Indian Billy. And it had a dream catcher on the front, you know, from the Palm Coast area. And he took it off and gave it to me. You know, stuff like that happens to me all the time, you know. And I don't know, maybe that's
people love me, you know.
You know, part of God's way of, you know, making me feel welcome and like people love me, you know.
I was fortunate enough that the doctor, you know, to be brought
to
me.
When I was new, I was fortunate enough that
really good
to walk in, you know, to be brought to a meeting,
you know. I went to the
where,
for about my first week
with some really good people there, and
you know,
they had a few things to say to me. You know, I went to meetings for about my first week.
Anybody was,
you know, still using and everything.
And
I remember, you know, they used to say anybody with any weapons or drugs or whatever, you know, take them outside in Quebec. And I'd always sit there feeling, you know, it was a big joke to me then, you know, like kind of a pocket full of pills or something.
You know, it was the middle of winter time, winter of 85, 86.
So I came to Narcotics Anonymous because, you know, it was the middle of the winter time. It was winter of 85, 86.
And
there was like a foot and a half, 2 feet of snow on the ground all winter long. And it was like zero out of a lot and all that. And, you know, I've been living in a car for, you know, for years. You know, stolen cars and, you know, sleeping in basements and stuff. Anyway, I got to this meeting, and I could still remember how warmly I was welcomed and stuff. And, you know, and people just couldn't do enough for me, you know, like, and, you know, and encourage me and stuff, and I really felt something. That's probably the main thing, you know, like what I'm describing, you know, like coming up here and being welcomed and stuff that's kept me here, you know. You know, I've said all along that if that ever stopped, I'm out of here, you know, that kind of thing, you know. And it's never stopped, and I can't foresee it ever stopping, you know. It's just, you know, because that's what we do, you know. We care about each other, we love each other and stuff, and that's real important to me, because I had a whole lifetime and that just did not happen in my life before I got here, you know. You know, I was the kind of guy that, you know, like, I was always the big show off, and I had to do everything, you know, further out than anybody else, and get higher than everybody else, and have the best drugs and all that, you know. So as a consequence, I was pretty popular, you know, and everybody thought I was far out and everything, but deep down inside, there was this guy who, you know, was scared to death and never thought I was good enough for anything and all that, but you people have proven that that's not right, you know. And especially, you know, working the steps and, you know, and the other things that we do, you know, checking ourselves out, you know, and being on this journey, you know, that we're on here, you know, I find that's not true for any of us, that we're human beings and we're probably better than we are worse kind of thing, you know. If we just let ourselves be. But, you know, when I was new, you know, they taught me some real basic, you know, like values and some real basic things that we do here to stay clean, you know, like, you know, of course, the first was, you know, like, get clean, Billy. And then after I got clean, you know, I went to detox. I had no intention of getting clean here or staying clean, none at all. I came because, like I was saying, because it was donuts and coffee and cookies and stuff, and somewhere to be for an hour and a half or 2 hours, you know. You know, after that first meeting. But somehow or another, I ended up in detox, you know. After every meeting, you know, they'd call the detox. You had to call a detox and report in for 3 days. And they'd call and report in for me and everything. And they got me a date, which was like,
a week after the first meeting I got to, you know, like, to go into the detox. I had no intention of doing that, you know. But somehow or another, I ended up there and everything. I remember walking in the big sliding doors down at St. Francis in Pittsburgh, you know, these big electric sliding doors in the basement for the emergency room, walking through those doors, you know, like taking my last handful of pills, saying, what the hell, you know, what are you doing here, man, you know? Because I, you know, I really didn't have a clue that that we could get clean or stay clean or lead a different life than I was leading or anything else, you know. I just didn't have a clue. But some of the things they taught me early on was that I can't do this alone. And, you know, that we can, I can't, we can. That's one of the basic values that they taught me. And I, you know, I found that to be true. And they taught me that the bigger my we is, in other words, the more people that I know in recovery from wherever, that the better off I'd be, the stronger my recovery would be. And I found that to be true, too. And they said one way to do that is get involved in service work. And, you know, you start out at the home group level being, you know, secretary, GSR, whatever, you know, and from there maybe move on to area, and from there move on to the region. And I did all that, you know, got on the board of directors. You know, I was on our spiritual retreat committee for about 3 years and ended up being chair of that, you know, the tri-state. And my we is humongous. And I know there's some other people here, too, that have that same kind of we. And, that, you know, that's one of the things that really helps me, is I can go just about anywhere and I'm going to know some people, you know, and get a warm welcome and all that, you know. But, you know, that's why I'm really glad to be here today, and I like going anywhere. And I also like speaking, too, because I get in touch with myself and my recovery and, you know, all that stuff just by going over, you know, what my life was like and you know, what it's like now and all that. You know, it's entirely 100%, 180-degree difference than it was, you know, for 44 years before I got here. And if I'm grateful for anything, you know, it's not for material things or anything, you know, it's because I got some peace, and I got a choice today of being crazy or not. You know, I don't have to be nuts, and I still get nuts once in a while because I got this disease. You know, and if I'm not real careful and I don't work a diligent program every day, all day long, every day, you know, like I get a little weird, man. Sometimes a lot weird. You know, I really have to keep my mind on way I'm doing, what I'm doing, and how I'm conducting myself and how I'm treating other people, mainly. You know. Because I'm the user, man. You know, I'm a manipulator. I learned how to do that as a child. You know, my old man was a salesman. And that's about the only thing he ever taught me growing up was how to manipulate, you know, and how to sell something to somebody. So there I was. And some of the other values they gave me, another one, which is, I don't know which one of these ones is best. I guess they're all equally as good, was that early in recovery, in other words, from the get-go, from Jump Street, so to speak, that I built a good foundation of not taking nothing, praying every morning, and maybe if you have to all day long, you know, asking God for help, you know, get a sponsor, try to talk to him every day, you know, and I did that. I did it every day for the first couple, 3 years. I talked to my sponsor every day, sometimes two or three or four times a day. You know, stay away from people, places, and things. That's a real big one there. You know, because I kind of subconsciously tested that when I was new. You know, I went around, you know, the main place where I used to hang out, you know, to see what the boys were doing and all that. And every time I'd even get near there, man, it would start inside. My stomach would start churning. I'd start getting nervous and shit. You know, it's not that I wanted to use everything. It just made me really weird to go around those people, you know. And later on, I started noticing that when I would do that, you know, like the old Billy would start coming back. You know, I'd start like getting into hustling mode and stuff like that, you know, and I did not like that feeling. And I still don't like it, you know. I got to be real careful with that stuff. But, you know, they said get a home group, which I did right away. I guess for my first couple of years clean, you know, like during that period of time, I had 10 different home groups. You know, like five at a time sometimes, you know, during the first couple of years. And they told me that was okay, and it was. It really helped me feel like I belonged here, you know, to walk in a meeting and just immediately start setting up chairs and you know, ashtrays and stuff. And they told me to do that, that would really help me feel like I belonged and help me with, you know, start helping me, you know, feeling like I had some self-worth in it. You know, later on, you know, like on the convention committee and the retreat and stuff, they told me that the best thing you can do is when this is, you know, do whatever you can, you know, during all the events happening, especially after the meeting, go outside and pick up cigarette butts and mop the floor if it needs mopped and stuff like that, you know. And of course, early on, my attitude is, how the hell is that going to help me with my recovery, you know? But I did it anyway because they told me to do it. And lo and behold, it really helped me. You know, at the time, I didn't know how, but it really helped my spirit grow, and it really helped me feel like I was, you know, part of something, and I had some kind of worth anyway, you know. So, I kept on doing that stuff, but I still try to do it, too, you know. Wherever I am, I still try to do it a little bit anyway. And, you know, all these things really helped me build that good foundation and stuff, you know. And I had my first sponsor that I had for at least my first year clean anyway, they called him the Step Nazi, you know. I didn't know that before I asked him. You know, it was this guy that I knew out on the street. We weren't partners or anything, but we looked a lot alike. You know, we had the same MO, you know, the way we lived and the way we did things and stuff. And he was there, you know. He was at the meetings and stuff. And when I finally got up enough guts after a couple of weeks, you know, he'd wait for me every night at Eaton Park after the meetings, you know, because everybody knew I wanted to ask this guy to be my sponsor, you know. So after a couple of weeks, I was able to do that. I had a basic sponsor before that, you know, the guy that took me to my first meetings and stuff. But he wasn't the guy that I was going to stick with. I knew that, you know, because he was trying to, he was babying me and stuff and waiting on me hand and foot. And I just had a feeling that wasn't healthy, you know, although I sucked it right up, you know. But anyway, you know, like one night at Eaton Park, you know, I walked in there and he must have known. I guess he could just tell because I had that look in it about me and stuff, you know. And I just walked right up to him and he got up from the table smiling and everything and gave me a hug and everything. And I said, hey, Shannon, that was Goliath. And I said, look, I really need you to sponsor me, man. You know, you think you could do that? And he just, he started crying and stuff. But before the night was over, there he was with the steps right off the bat, you know. And every time I'd call him on the phone, you know, with my complaints and stuff about life and about, you know, I don't know if I can do this or not. Where the hell am I going? I'm too old to, you know, like to do this. And, you know, like I weighed 120 pounds when I got clean, you know. And, you know, I was real sickly and everything. They were betting I wasn't going to make it 2 weeks after I got clean. You know, I was going to physically die because I was real sick. But anyway, every time I'd call him on the phone, we'd always end up talking about the steps. Whatever I was talking about, somehow he would relate to some step or another or some recovery principle or whatever. You know, at first I didn't want to hear it, you know, and I'd hang up on the phone a lot. I'd just hang up on him, you know, and then a couple minutes later, you know, I dialed back and said, I'm sorry, man, you know, like, what were you saying? You know, at first I wasn't picking up too much because my head was, like, really racing, you know, like, for the first 6 months to a year clean, man. I couldn't hardly talk to anybody, you know, because my mind was going faster than I could talk. But he was very patient with me and very loving and everything, you know, although he was very, very stern about working the steps and all that, you know. And at the end of my first year clean, he got loaded. And as a matter of fact, I'm probably responsible partly for getting him loaded because, you know, like there was these couple sisters in the program at the time, and they were these couple of girls that were, before they came to NA, and even for that first year or so, they weren't too sure they wanted to stop doing this. They were running, real live white heroin back from India. And they even tried to get me to go with them, you know, like to bring some back and all that, you know. And I was like, you know, for that first year, I was like a little itchy with that. Part of me really wanted to do that, make a lot of money, but get really high on some real pure dope right from the people that were making it, you know. But anyway, I told him about it, and he was having a hard time in the relationship he was in and all that. And he went and looked this girl up, and they got loaded, you know. He stayed loaded for, I think, about 30 days and then went back in treatment again up in Butler there. And then in the halfway house, he stayed up there and everything. And, and, one of the other guys had been around for a long time, you know, immediately grabbed a hold of me and said to me, so I'm going to be your sponsor now. And I said, okay. And he happened to be one of those step guys, man. And he kept asking me the same way about the steps. That's all we talked about. After he listened to my problems and stuff, and he was patient and he'd listen. You know, it was all bullshit, you know, that I had coming out. And, you know, he related to recovery in some way, you know. You know, but after a while, you know, like I was really, really sucking that up, you know, subconsciously, if not consciously, on any given day, you know, I was really sucking up what they were saying, you know, and what they were doing is they were teaching me how to recover, you know, teaching me principles and teaching me how to think and how to do things, you know, in a recovery way. And I'm really grateful for that now, because I did build that good foundation, and I do get a lot of relief from this disease, you know. And it's because of that, you know. And I think about recovery all day long, every day, and talk to people about recovery and stuff. And that's why, you know. And I believe that if I wouldn't have done that, I don't think I'd have stuck around, you know. Because I'm a crazy person, you know what I mean? I'm one of these people that traveled all over the world looking for the dust of the Grand Wazoo, you know. And I found it, too, you know. You know, the songs about the purple berries. As soon as I hear something like that, I'd wherever they were talking about, I'd go there. You know, North Africa, I didn't care. You know, let's go, man, you know. But I celebrated a year clean, and about 2 months later, my first sponsor, you know, he had been clean for a year after I got a year clean. He had a year clean about 2 months later, and he came back to meetings, you know, in Pittsburgh and everything. And when I saw him and he got his year key tag, you know, I gave him my year medallion and asked him, you know, will you sponsor me again, you know, because I know he got high and everything, but this guy, if there ever was any Mr. N.A., this guy was it, you know. I mean, this is in my thoughts, you know. If you got to know him, you'd probably think the same thing. You can't talk to this guy without him talking recovery. You just can't do it. It's impossible. He will not relent. And that's probably what saved him and got him back here real quick. You know, I guess at the time he had about 4.5 years clean. This is 1986. So he sponsored me, you know, through my fourth and fifth step. And about that time, you know, I started getting real, like we do. You know, I found out that recovery is like, it's a progression and everything. We all go through the same changes. You know, I don't care who you are. We all go through the same set of changes. And about that time, I started thinking I knew everything. And I needed to get another sponsor, you know, somebody that, you know, different that, you know, I don't know, that knew more than he did or something, because I started thinking that I knew as much as he did. So I got another sponsor, and that was real hard, man. You know, I got somebody that all he wanted to do was joke around and stuff, but that didn't last too long, and Shannon moved away somewhere else. I forget where he moved, but he wasn't available anyway. But I ended up getting another really good sponsor, and continued working the steps, you know. The steps have been the cornerstone of my recovery. You know, like every day when I pray, you know, I've made my prayers, you know, with each step, you know, there's a prayer, you know, or each group of steps, you know, a little group of steps, you know, there's a prayer, you know. My prayers every morning go like this, you know, God help me to be a good person and a good human being, to do the best I can in all my affairs. Please keep me clean today and help me to stay clean. God, please take my will and my life and guide me in my recovery. Please show me how to live. God, help me to live free of the limitations of my past. And give me knowledge of thy will for me and the power to carry that out. And if I may be thy instrument to help another suffering addict, please help me and guide me. That's my prayers every day, my morning prayer. And that really sets me off, really gets my mind straight every day. Just like coming to a meeting, you know, like I always listen real hard to the readings every time. Because it gets my head straight, you know, like about what we're about and what I should be concerned with and how I should be conducting myself and so forth and so on. Just by listening to the readings before every meeting, I get centered, you know. And I'm like everybody else. I want to sit around every meeting and talk to my friends and stuff, you know, but listening to the readings helps me to, like, participate in the meeting, you know, to get my head, like, on the right track. Like I said, I was doing a lot of service work, and just like everybody else, you know, like when I got clean, I tended to want to hang out with the people that I knew out on the street, you know, and people that were friends of mine and all that. And I was advised that that might not be a good idea, that you should, you know, like I said, you should widen your horizons with people, you know. And the more people you get to know, you're going to find out that you don't really need to do that, you know. But and they said, you know, you need to meet people from all over and stuff. So that's one of the reasons I did service work. And I'm glad I did. Because I'm an isolator like everybody else, you know. Even like, you know, for a while I tended to think that that my main home group that was the best meeting in NA, and the rest of them were full of shit and all that, and it's just not true, you know. You know, stuff like that. And, you know, I was taught to live these principles, you know, that the steps are for me and the traditions are for us, you know, to help me get along with you, you know, and I find that to be true too, you know. I was taught from the beginning to practice acceptance of everybody, no matter what they're doing or what's going on or whatever, whether they're using it or not, to just accept people for who and what they were. And that was a real hard one for me because, you know, being an addict, I think that everybody ought to see things exactly the way I see them. And, of course, that's total shit, too. You know what I mean? And that's why we have these principles that we practice and we live by, especially in service work. You know, I find that out to be true. If I follow the guidelines, everything goes real smoothly. But if I'm always arguing about we should change this or we should do this differently, you know, like differently, period, or especially different than other groups or than other areas or other regions, you know, like we just get in trouble when we do that, you know, and things are things don't go smoothly and everybody's always like up in the air about things and frustrated and all that, you know. So that's why how and why I learned how to really follow our traditions, you know, and do things the NA way. And there is an NA way to do things, a definite NA way to do things. And I found that, you know, things always go smoother when I do it that way. Or when we do it that way, I should say. But, you know, I wrote a four-step, and I did it exactly the way that my sponsor at the time did, and his sponsor before him. And, you know, it was real simple, you know. Pick a certain time of the day that you want to write, hopefully like before you know, so you can go to a meeting like that evening or whatever, or that afternoon, you know, in case you're feeling crazy or anything like that. Pray before I write, you know, ask God to help me, stay in real close contact with my sponsor, and you know, on each day, you know, pray before I write, and write until I feel drained, you know. And that's what I did. And usually after half an hour to 45 minutes on every day that, you know, every day's writing, you know, I would start feeling kind of drained, and then I knew it was time to stop. And they taught me to write something positive, write a gratitude list, or write anything positive, you know, like at the end of each day's writing. And I did that too. And it went real smooth for me, you know. Later on when I did my fist, they said, don't go back and read what you write. And, you know, at least until you do your fifth step. And when I did my fifth step, you know, first half of my fifth step was reading the fourth step, you know, out loud. And I saw everything that we're supposed to see in that, you know, patterns of, you know, of things, you know, especially in areas of my interactions with other people and, you know, my family life and all that. You know, I really got to see myself, you know. And I did a fifth step it was beautiful, too. I did it at the monastery in Pittsburgh, man. And I did it up there because at the time, just about everybody was doing it there. And I especially did it because I thought there might be some stuff in that fourth step that I didn't want, you know, anybody to talk about or anything like that. You know, the brothers or the priests up there, you know, like have a vow of anonymity and all that. And I knew that no matter what I told them, that they'd keep it to themselves, you know, that they had to. But anyway, I went up and did that, and we talked for, you know, read it. It took about, I don't know, an hour and a half or something to read my fourth step. It was pretty thick. But, you know, a lot of it was repeat stuff in there, you know. As a matter of fact, I was sitting out in the parking lot before, about an hour before it was my scheduled appointment time, and I'm writing like crazy out in the parking lot, you know. But anyway, I did the... fifth step up there, and it was really beautiful. This guy had his robes on and all that, man. And I'm the kind of person, I really like all that symbolic stuff, you know. Obviously. And I felt really good when I walked out of there. You know, we talked for about an hour and a half, you know, like just talking about things, and he related the prodigal son, you know, story out of the Bible, you know, like to me and all that, and that really helped me to see things a little clearer too. And when I walked out of there, you know, I was one of those people that you hear about. I was blown, man. I was walking on a cloud when I walked out of there, you know. And I heard a lot of people share, you know, that when they did their fifth step, you know, the sponsor told them to burn it and take a little vacation from the steps, you know, for, you know, a couple of days or a week or whatever, you know. And my sponsor didn't have me do that. He had me reading six that night, you know. And we worked six for about a year, just like I did a deeper fourth in six, you know, learned about character defects and a bunch of other stuff that he suggested that I write about, you know. Doing that writing and all that, and doing it that way, I really learned a lot about myself, and I'm grateful for that. You know, it's like in 6-2, you know, you're really seeing things about yourself, and you can't stop doing them. The harder you try, the worse it gets. Or maybe the more exposed it gets, something like that, you know. But I remember when we did seven, we did a formal seven, got on our knees and said the seven-step prayer, God help me live free of the limitations of my past. And I actually felt some relief when I did that prayer, you know. He and I got on our knees together and all that, you know, and it's gotten a lot better, more and more and more since then, you know, and I really like your area logo too. The journey continues, because this is a journey, you know, and there's guys in the fellowship, you know, like that have really helped me and continue to help me, you know, like continuously. That I ask whenever I see them, you know, I just smile and look in their eyes and they look in mine and I say, hey man, is there more? And they always like smile and say, yeah, there's always more, man. And I found out to be true that we really are on a spiritual journey. And a quote out of the basic text, and I don't know if it's in the 12th step or what it's from, but it says that our capacity for spiritual growth is unlimited. And I'm finding that to be true, that the more I work at this stuff, you know, like the better I feel, you know, towards myself, towards life, towards other people. That's a big thing for me, feeling good about, you know, towards other people, because, you know, before I came here and for a while after I got here, you know, like, every human being in the world was stupid, full of shit. I always knew I could figure out a better way to do things, you know, and all that. And that's part of having this disease, you know, is thinking like that, you know. I've had to work real hard to get out of that kind of thinking. And, you know, once in a while, I still get back in it, man, and boy, am I... People just stay away from me when I'm like that, man. I mean, I know, you know, you've heard the saying here that you're the last one to know, you know, when you're acting out and that shit, but I can tell real quick. Because I go around, especially my home group, I go there, and when I'm acting out and shit, boy, they just stay away from me. They just leave me be, man. But I continued on with the steps, and I work them every day, you know, like... Each step, I made a list. You know, my sponsor told me to make a list. I got down on my knees, asked for help, got up and made a list. You know, now and then there's still people added to that list that I remember from the past. You know, and we got together shortly after that and went over the list and everything. You know, one column was the amends that I need to make, you know, the people, and the other column was the type of amends I need to make to somebody. And I heard before that, you know, get together with your sponsor and go over it. Because there's going to be some that you probably shouldn't make, you know. Talks about it, except when to do so and injure them or others, you know. And the other is us. You know, we scratched a few of them off that people would have probably killed me or something if I made the amends, you know, or I'd go to prison or whatever. And there was a few of them in there. And not too long after that, in fact, right then and there, when we did the eighth step, you know, I made the list and we went over it and everything. He told me to pick one out. Your choice, Billy. Pick one out and go make it. You know, get started on this. He said, there's no hurry, there is a hurry to get started on that first one. After you complete your eighth step, you should go start making your amends. But just start doing it. And so I picked out an amends that I owed for something that I had done in recovery. This really nice girl that I got to be friends with, you know, doing service work. Her father owned some gas stations, you know, like one of them was the all-night gas station in New Kensington, you know, like right where you come off the turnpike down there, you know, sitting in the booth all night. Well, I got pissed off at him because he put me on weekends. He told me he was going to give me a regular 5-day, you know, 40-hour week, and he put me on weekends working 3 nights a week, you know, and I told him I need more hours than that to be able to pay my rent and all that. So, you know, this was early. I had, you know, a little more than 2 years clean. So I sat there every night for a while, like, you know, like building up a resentment to this old guy. And he was a nice old guy, you know. And I should have been immediately grateful to get the job and remained that way. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's hard for people to trust people like that. And I sat there harboring this resentment. And I started to justify him stealing cigarettes. I stole a couple packs of cigarettes every night that I worked. I'd fill my car up on Sunday night. You know, that would keep me going the rest of the week and all that. Well, come to the amends step, that's the first one I wanted to make, because by that time I really was grateful that I had had that job, and this guy, it was really nice to me and really helped me, and that was the one that was really eating away at me. So, you know, of course I didn't know what was going to happen and stuff, whether those guys was going to call the police or whatever, but I called him on the phone, and, Al, I need to talk to you. And I hadn't worked, you know, by the time I did my, you know, started on my ninth step, I hadn't seen him for a couple of years, you know. So I called him up on the phone and I said, Al, you know, it's Bill. I really need to talk to you. Oh, Bill, how you doing and all that. You know, he didn't know the difference. And I said, well, I just really need to talk to you about something really important, man. You know, could I make an appointment with you or something like that? He says, well, yeah, just tell me when you want to see me and come on over. And of course I have time, always have time for you. So I said, oh, how about 10 o'clock tomorrow morning? He said, okay, I'll be here. So I went over, and first thing I did was I told him what I was doing. You know, I explained to him what I was doing, and I told him what I had done. And I said, you know, I tried as best I could to figure out how much money I owe you. And I'm going to give you $50 now, and I'm going to give you $50 a month till this is paid up. And the whole time I was talking to him, he didn't say a word. He was sitting there with his mouth hanging up. This is like an 82-year-old guy, you know. And when I was done and everything, you know, he took the $50 and he said, Bill, he said, I've never heard anything like this. I've never, you know, known anybody to do this with me or anybody else. And he said, whatever you're doing, you just keep on doing it, and you don't owe me nothing, you know. And that was like another one of the heaviest spiritual experiences I've had. And I walked away from there knowing, okay, you know, this immense thing is for real, man. You know, this really is going to build my spirit. Not just, and I found out later on that I tried to make some amends, and they just didn't want to hear it, you know. Especially the women that I had been, you know, made amends, tried to make amends with, they did not want to hear it. You know, slamming phones down, slamming doors in my face, you know, and it was a little disheartening, but I was taught that's not my problem. I'm not doing the amends for them. I'm doing that for me, to help my spirit grow, taking responsibility for what I had done. Not saying I'm sorry, taking responsibility for what I had done, and, you know, trying to change and not do that anymore. And I was really, the whole process, you know, going under 10. And by that time, I really knew the value of taking responsibility for anything that I'd done, you know, like immediately. Because when we don't do that, man, when it sits in there and, you know, just like it talks about in the book and runs around inside of it and boils over and stuff. And I know that if I don't do that, man, it's going to make me crazy. Even if I'm not thinking about, you know, like what I had done to somebody. Like, subconsciously, it's running around in there, and I get crazy. And it's usually when I'm getting really crazy, it's because I've done something. Not somebody else has done something to me or something like I try to turn it into, but I've done something I need to take responsibility for. And I always get relief when I take responsibility for whatever it is that I've done, you know? And I found that to be real. That 10th step is real important. It's just as important as any other one, you know? And 11's, you know, just self-explanatory, you know, like, ask God for His will for me and the power to carry that out, you know. And I was taught not to pray for anything specific, just pray for that period. And God will let us know. He lets me know all the time what I'm supposed to do. And most of the time, it's just the next right thing. You know, that's right in front of me is what to do. But on specific things, even though I'm not asking for anything, you know, like something will pop right up real quick. You know? And I'll know what to do. But then it's up to me to do the right thing, you know? And all that. You know, and if I do, if everything's beautiful. And if I don't, I start getting crazy inside, you know? And 12 is self-explanatory, too. That's what we're doing here. You know, to live the spiritual life and to carry this message, you know. I think that's what we're talking about, you know, in step 11, is that's what God wants us to do, each and every one of us that's in recovery, that's living this spiritual life, is to carry it on to other people and to help other people, you know, like get out of this addiction trap that we get into, you know. And after we've been here for a little while, we all know that the drugs are just like 10% of the whole thing. The rest of it's us and how we learned how to think all those years and how we learned how to do things and, you know, manipulating and hustling and all that stuff, you know. And like I say, I like doing this because this is real 12-step work, you know, for me, you know, trying to help somebody else. And there's going to be somebody here, at least one person here, that's going to get something out of what I'm saying, you know. Even though I've been taught that when I'm up here looting, I'm up here for me. You know, like to be able to look at myself and all that, but I know that we touch each other, you know, we really touch each other. Yeah. Not much of any lead goes by that I don't get a tear come to my eyes and all that, because I really understand. And I'm really grateful not to be living the way that I lived all that time, because everything I did for 44 years turned out fucked up, everything. I mean, you know, I made lots of money selling drugs, man, and got to travel around the world and all that, but just like I've heard other people share, no matter where I went, there I was, you know, and really wasn't able to enjoy it. I've been on some of the most beautiful places on the planet, you know, and didn't enjoy being there because I'd always end up in an argument with whatever lady I was with or whatever, you know. I remember my ex-wife got so mad at me, and to this day I don't even know why she was mad at me, but we were on one of our six-month camping tours around the United States, and all of a sudden she wouldn't talk to me, and for 2 weeks we're out in the wilderness. No other human beings around, you know. I mean, out in the wilderness, and she would not talk to me for 2 weeks. And to this day, it still befuddles me, you know. To this day, I don't know whether it was her or me. But finally, she gave in. And I was just so happy to have somebody to talk to that I wasn't even mad anymore, you know. You know, I can't really express enough from my own experience too that you know, like about the NA way of doing things, you know, like living the steps and the traditions and you know, I wanted to get re-involved in service. I was deeply immersed in service for 10 years, you know. But after 10 years, you know, and going to meetings and arguing over the same shit over and over and over again, it don't matter what level of service or, you know, what kind of, whether it's the board on, you know, on up to like the home group, arguing over the same issues over and over and over. And that's not necessary. You know, like there was a set of guidelines put down a long time ago about everything. And, you know, in my mind, you know, if we keep doing it that way, you know, there's not going to be any problems. You know, there's a way of doing everything, you know, that we've heard. But, you know, I'll go to a regional meeting or something, and they're still arguing about the same shit we were 15 years ago. You know, doesn't make any sense to me. You know, it really doesn't. But you know, I accept it for what it is. You know, I just, and because it'd make me crazy, I just stay away from it. And then if somebody comes and asks me for my experience, strength, and hope, I've learned not to give my opinion, but give my experience, strength, and hope. I'll give it to them. And it's funny how people really don't want to hear that, you know. We're the kind of people, we want somebody to tell us what to do. You know, when we get to that point, we're befuddled and shit, you know, please tell me what to do. And actually, that's a good thing. Because when somebody's at that point, I'll tell them what to do, but I'll tell them what to do the NA way. You know, here's how I learned how to do this, you know. And I don't know how long I've been talking, but I've been like real sick for quite a while, you know, and probably not going to get better, but I'm getting kind of tired, my head's spinning a little bit, and I really it's really beautiful if you'd ask me to come up here, you know, and speak today. And what a great picnic, and I really love you guys up here. I really do, and thank you.
Thank you.